We have long argued that greater trade integration within Africa is a key way of leveraging the region's potential.
While global trade reached record levels last year, things are clearly changing fast. How will sub-Saharan Africa fare through it all?
So right now, the current shakeup in global value chains, although it's disruptive, can also create new trade and investment opportunities. I'm Andrew Tiffin, a Deputy Division Chief for the Regional Studies Division in the African Department, also the Mission Chief for Lesotho.
Tiffin and his team pulled together the Regional Economic Outlook for Sub-Saharan Africa twice a year, the latest one titled Recovery Interrupted.
So, needless to say, the global economy is going through crazy times. And it's amazing to me how so many of these countries in sub-Saharan Africa sort of manage through from crisis to crisis, like this current global trade reset, I guess we could call it. What do all these tariffs mean for the economy in the region?
Well, of course, that's the question that everybody's asking right now, not just in Africa. And it's not an easy question to answer, not least because the situation continues to evolve. We released our report just a few weeks ago, and in the report we tried to incorporate the impact of the initial wave of measures that were announced early in April. These include the bilateral tariffs announced by the United States on all of its trading partners, which reach as high as 50% for some countries in Africa, as well as the retaliatory measures that followed immediately from Canada and China. Now, the first thing that I would note here is that the direct exposure of sub-Saharan African exporters to U.S. tariffs is actually generally limited. Exports for the region to the U.S. is around less than 0.5% of the region's GDP. But for some individual countries, however, some countries are more exposed than others, and the impact is disproportionately larger for some of the region's smaller and more vulnerable countries. I would point out here countries like Lesotho or Madagascar.
Right.
In Lesotho, for example, exports to the US represent 10% of their GDP. Okay. So this represents quite a significant shock. A final thing to note is that the direct impact of tariffs is one thing, but the indirect impact of global uncertainty is a separate thing, and it's actually more important for many countries, including in particular commodity exporters who may be impacted by global conditions rather than direct tariffs. And again, for a lot of countries in sub-Saharan Africa, it's this uncertainty channel that's actually the more important.
Yeah, I mean, reading through the report, I wasn't surprised to see the downward revision after all these tariffs started happening. But I was a little surprised to see that it was less than a half a percentage point. You know, given all the uncertainty, as you just described, I was expecting to see a much bigger impact on the economy of the region.
So, yeah, that's an interesting question. Given the abrupt and sizable shift in global policies, wouldn't we have expected to see a larger impact on the region? So part of the answer lies in the title of our report, where we say recovery interrupted.
That's right.
Even with all its challenges, and even coming out of 4 years of repeated shocks, the region's economic recovery last year was a lot stronger than we had expected. 6 months ago, we had expected growth in 2024 to be relatively flat, about 3.5% of GDP. Actual growth turned out to be much, much stronger, around 4%, driven by public investment and high commodity exports. So, as we think about the impact of the most recent shock, we have a bit of a cushion in that we were starting off from a much stronger point. But when we talk about our projections, the first thing I have to note is that I have to include a health warning. As you can imagine, coming up with forecasts in the current environment is extraordinarily difficult, much more than usual. So our report spends a significant amount of time discussing the risks surrounding our forecast, emphasizing the fact that downside risks right now are pretty significant.
Yeah. So, one of the lifelines for many of these countries traditionally has been official development assistance, or ODA, which is essentially dried up. I mean, it's always been difficult to secure ODA. But, I mean, we're looking at a whole other level of difficulty. So does the report sort of look into what the potential impact of that unfortunate reality might be for the region?
We do, we do. Again, a lot is still uncertain, but we do see a longer-term trend facing the region where there's been a steady decline of official development assistance as a proportion of GDP. And right now, a number of bilateral donors, including the United States, but not just the United States, they're all considering scaling back their overseas aid budgets. Now, again, if I were just to look at the headline numbers, the impact might not seem dramatic at first. Region-wide, ODA flows represent about 2.5% of the region's GDP, of which the US makes up about 0.5% of GDP. But aid is heavily focused on critical sectors like education, health, and urgent humanitarian assistance. And many countries, especially small and vulnerable countries, rely on this foreign aid to supplement their budgets. And so a reduction in aid flows for these countries would significantly boost their funding needs, both for the budget and for the balance of payments, just adding to their overall burden.
Okay. So that said, I mean, some economists would argue that, you know, in times like these, that it might be best to sort of put development aside and focus more on stability. And I have trouble imagining putting development aside when a third of the population is living under the poverty line, as I read in your report. So, but how would you respond to that?
Certainly, there's no doubt that policymakers face some difficult choices right now. Indeed, our report points to what we call the policymaker's trilemma, where they have to find a delicate balance between macroeconomic stability on the one hand, social tensions on the other hand, and development needs. So the choices and trade-offs between these goals are never, never easy. But for sub-Saharan Africa, they've just been made a lot more difficult in the current environment, especially with higher borrowing costs and reduced inflows. For most countries, high debt and limited fiscal space have required fiscal consolidation and a focus on ensuring stability. But the report strongly argues against putting development aside. Instead, we emphasize the need to find ways to ease the trade-offs between stability and development. And that involves policies that reduce waste, improve efficiency, and maybe prioritize critical spending. Also, policies that protect the most vulnerable, either through targeted transfers or social safety nets. Tools like e-payment systems that can get money quickly to the people who need it most, and growth strategies that prioritize upfront job creation. Now, there's no one-size-fits-all. The options and trade-offs will be different from country to country, but it's not about abandoning development. It's about pursuing stability in a way that minimizes harm to the most vulnerable and lays the groundwork for future growth.
So one of the things that the IMF does a lot of is technical assistance. And you know, in times like these, do you find that you're getting a lot more demand for help in trying to sort of establish these policies that might help them manage, you know, what you just described?
Absolutely, especially on these technical issues like, you know, how do we build any payment system that can best serve the vulnerable? How do we improve the efficiency, or at least keep track of the spending that we're engaging in? How do we measure the impact of that? How do we look for efficiencies in the way that we spend, in the way that we tax? That provides added resources that gives us extra scope to help the most vulnerable.
That's great. And finally, given all this trade uncertainty, might this be an opportunity for the region to develop further or deepen its regional integration, like, you know, develop stronger trade relationships with neighboring countries?
Yes, but this isn't just a response to the current trade environment. We have long argued that greater regional integration, greater regional trade integration, is a key way of leveraging the region's potential. And in the face of external shocks, either in the form of trade tensions or in the form of supply shocks from conflicts outside the region, or even just the general fallout of geopolitical fragmentation, greater trade integration within Africa is a key part of strengthening the region's resilience. So right now, the current shakeup in global value chains, although it's disruptive, can also create new trade and investment opportunities. And arrangements such as the African Continental Free Trade Agreement provide one of the most promising ways to create a bigger market, integrate regional supply chains, boost investment, and strengthen resilience. So we've long been in favour of this. Right now, it's even more urgent.
Andrew Tiffin, a deputy in the Regional Studies Division of the IMF African Department. Thank you so much.
Thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
So again, that was IMF economist Andrew Tiffin talking about the latest regional economic outlook for sub-Saharan Africa, which you can download at imf.org. And look for other IMF podcasts wherever you listen. You can also follow us on X. Our handle is at IMF_podcast. I'm Bruce Edwards. Thanks for listening.